This is Mary Josh from Dig It Magazine. You're about to hear a conversation with Ken Drews, garden book author, garden magazine editor, writer, plantsman. It's about ideas presented in his book, The Passion for Gardening, Inspiration for a Lifetime, published by Clarkson Potter Publishers. The people and their gardens were absolutely gorgeous, you know, and their philosophies that you presented in the book. Some of them made me feel a lot better about myself. Like, I'm not the only one, put it that way.
You mean because they're obsessed?
Yes.
Or passionate. We like to say passionate. I like to say passionate, but sometimes when I write obsessed, I'll think I'm passionate. And when I want to say hobby, I write passion, because hobby puts it down and obsessed makes it crazy.
Right, and it's so much more than a hobby. It is a lifetime, because I don't think you ever lose it, do
unless
you?
Unless you're infirmed, and it's one of the few things that you can do for your whole lifetime, depending on the scale and how you adapt. But, I mean, you can't play tennis for a lifetime, necessarily.
Right.
And so many other things that people want to do or are passionate about. I shouldn't put down other passions.
But you talk about it being like a living art. Recently, I read some quote, and I can't remember who it was by. A finished garden is a dead garden. Then you talking about it being a living art, and it makes me think of other kinds of art. You're a sculptor as well. Do you still do that?
Yes, and I think they're very closely related. The medium changes. And I guess the nice thing about sculpture is more permanent, but it's also not as exciting. And then when it's done, it is done. And I have to move on to the next one. I don't take a lot of satisfaction. And usually when I sculpt something, I'm like, oh, I should have done this, or people really like it. Oh, I'm embarrassed by that. So it's, that, as I was saying that, I was thinking how we're all embarrassed by our gardens too. Or at least we apologize. I've never met a gardener who doesn't apologize. First thing out of his or her mouth is, oh, I'm sorry about this, and if only you could see that, and the weeds are so terrible. And it's the first thing I look at this garden and I think, oh, the weeds. I can barely see anything else but the weeds. I'm not sure about what that is. I know what the apology is about a couple of things. I think the apology is about knowing what you either wish it could be or what it sometimes is. And those moments are so short that people really do miss them. So it isn't just something that you say. It is, to a certain extent, something you say, or maybe it's something you say about your house when it's not tidy enough or something, you know, you feel like you're being exposed. I guess that's true. Mm-hmm. It's not your house, it's you.
Right.
People are looking at it.
Right.
Your fly's open or something.
Yeah.
But I also think that there are so many things that, and since I'm not here all the time, and I've been away for days, there's something that I was waiting to see bloom. It's over. I missed it this year. And how many years? That happens so many times. It happens in iris or, well, daylilies, usually there's another flower coming, but I was noticing that some daylilies bloomed. I didn't even see them. I just missed those days when they were blooming. This whole entire year of my life, I won't see them. So,
that's interesting.
I should look at the other things. I really should.
Mm-hmm.
I should stop and smell the roses, but I'm too busy weeding them, weeding around them.
But you like it. It's enjoyable.
Oh, it's...
I mean, weeding.
Weeding?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't really like it.
You don't like it?
No, I know that whole Zen thing, that Zen meditation that some people get into with weeding. Oh, no, I don't like that so much. Sometimes, in early spring, there's a few days where maybe it seems like there's always something screaming for attention.
Right.
At the same time, and at this time of year, in now August, weeding is really saving lives. It's rescuing, you know. If I don't get to weed that, it will smother something that I love and kill it.
Because?
It'll be too dark, it'll cover it up, it'll melt because it'll rot. It's taking the water away, the competition, especially now, you know, my obsession. And I will use the word obsession with Stilcrest. It's just astounding. And I'm ahead of it, but... Just
All right, tell me about you. You talked about when you were a kid and used to make mud pies and all that stuff.
As you were saying that, I was thinking about how we all played it. And you remember when we were kids, this is funny to say, like, you know, cause it was, I don't know when it ended, but in the summer, you played out until it was dark. And and your parents were calling for you and yelling for you to come in. And it's getting dark. It's almost 9 o'clock. You want to be out those last seconds. mm-hmm. on the longest days, and now you go around, you don't even see anybody outside. I think I started by playing in the dirt and moving dirt around, and if I was lucky enough to see a critter or some bug or something, that was just wonderful mm-hmm. and fascinating to me always. And then I think when I was really young, I know that my mother took me to a nature preserve. It still exists in Watchung Mountains, the Trailside Garden, Trailside Museum.
They're there.
And I think we went there where we would go a couple times a summer. And I saw, in the spring, I saw a Jack in the Pulpit, and my mother told me the name. And I just thought that was just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was the moment it started, but I never have turned back.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember rescuing plants or trying to, or finding something growing and moving it and watching it, and maybe it worked, and it often did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I found that very thrilling, especially when you find a seedling. In my case, it was a seedling of a tulip tree, and I moved it. It was in the gutter, fallen out of the gutter. I moved it and planted it, and then it's a tree. It doesn't happen overnight, but it grows, and it's mine. I'm participating in it. I don't own it, but I'm sharing in its life, and I helped it. And it's like rescuing a baby bunny or a bird that fell out of a nest, only we know that's not always what you do.
Right,
safer
right.
to do it with a tulip tree.
Excellent.
And years later, I just drove by the place where I grew up, and the tree was there. And I remember it was injured in a touch football accident. It broke, I guess, at least 30 years later. It had a little L, but you can't go home again.
As somebody famous said. Mm-hmm. When did you start making gardens?
Well, when I was in college, I got really into the whole houseplant thing that was going on. When everybody had lots of houseplants, and mm-hmm. people had macrame baskets with spider webs, and then everybody did.
Right.
And that was not only accepted, that was normal. I think people would hang plants in their cargo vans and their with the plush rug and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just had plants everywhere, and mm-hmm. that sort of went away. Then there was an interest in vegetable gardening, which I never got so interested in because I never had a place for it, and still don't. I don't have enough sun. And so it started with houseplants and being very fascinated in college, shopping, mm-hmm. seeing new things, and I just found every plant incredibly fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been plants for me. It's plant, mm-hmm. plant-driven, the next plant, and there seems to be a plant. Everywhere I go, there's something I don't know. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some people in the country, fewer now, who are seeing these new things or bringing them for other people to see. And there's so many new frontiers.
What do you mean? They're bringing in new things. You mean like from other countries?
Either from other countries or by selecting something that has a different color leaf. I think one of the things that I get off on most is something that's always been there, or maybe it's in another country, but often it's not. Often it's here, and just nobody paid attention to it. And it's great, or maybe no one has paid attention to it for 80 years because it was boring or something else flashier pushed it away, and it's incredible, and just it's been ignored, and there's so many plants.
Give me an example of that.
Well, I can give you an example of something that's been ignored, which is
okay.
the viburnum macrocephalum. When I grew up, my house, which was the ugly ranch house in Plainfield, New Jersey, was built on the site of a large house, which I never saw, it burned down, but mm-hmm. some of the plants were still there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big thing that we used to call snowball, and it was, the common name was Chinese snowball, and it's actually Viburnum macrocephalum, which means big head, macrocephalum, big head. And mm-hmm. we just took it for granted, and we loved it, and then it disappeared. And it's a very easy plant to grow, and I think at this very moment, no one is selling this plant. It's a big plant, has big flowers, but it's been pushed away by the Japanese snowball, which is more compact, handsome leaves, smaller flowers, and you see that one around quite a bit, May blooming. But this big one, they're like big white double hydrangeas in the middle of May. And it's over there, and I just ignore it when it's green, and when it's in bloom, it's fantastic.
I remember that, yeah.
And that's not even for sale now.
Oh.
So that's a plant that I wanted to get. I knew it was out there. I was at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I already had the plant, which I got from a cutting from some people in Georgia. There was a rumor that it wasn't hardy and that it would be damaged by frost, which is completely not true after being here for 8 years at least, maybe 10 years. So no one was propagating it, but there's a nursery that Wilkerson Mill that specializes in hydrangeas, and they were not selling it, but they propagated it for me, and I got it, and it's incredibly easy to grow, and probably mm-hmm. easy to propagate too. I saw it, I guess I was in South Carolina, and I saw it, and I thought, I've got to get that plant.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and there was an exhibit on Tiffany and his place on Long Island that had burned down, and There's a stained glass window that showed hydrangeas and wisteria. And the hydrangeas were taller than the wisteria. And I thought, that's kind of odd. I know that he liked hydrangeas a lot, but they don't really bloom with wisteria in May. And they're certainly not taller than wisteria. And I knew what it was because in 1900, it was a very popular plant. So it said on the label that they thought it was hydrangea. They called it hydrangea and wisteria, but they had made the name up because there was no name. And it was Viburnum macrocephalum.
Wow.
But anyway, that's just a little side story.
Well, that's
we told them. I wrote a letter and someone else did too.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if they changed the label or not. Probably not.
Well, that's pretty neat. That ladder, what are you doing to that tree? Pruning it?
I pruned it a couple of times. It's a beech. It's a big purple beech, which is a variety called Reversii.
Right.
Which now has come back. It's funny, that was also hard to find, and I see it now around. Because I think it has the best color. Most of them turn green, especially by now. And it's greenish, but it still has this nice new growth.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to make a column, mostly because I want it. There's no room. I mean, it's an enormous tree, and it's not so young anymore.
Yeah,
it was
like
about 2 feet tall when I got it.
So did you go, you didn't go to school for horticulture,
no,
did you?
No, I didn't.
Art?
I was a filmmaker, so
it
is art, but...
Uh-huh, but so you went to school for that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, it sounds interesting.
It was interesting.
Uh-huh.
Really hard.
Uh-huh.
Too much collaboration. It's a nice word for it. Too many people who could mess up your work.
Uh-huh.
In film. Film is really extremely hard. And then doing books is, it's so close to making a film, it's hard to imagine.
Because of the collaboration.
Because of the number of people who can mess it up and how you have to really watch it. And also it's structured. It has a beginning and a middle and an end. It's a lot like a little movie, like a little version of a big movie, a good 2.5 hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of work and it takes a long time. It takes probably, people think because I have so many books I've done, I just crank them out, but it's 4 years between them usually.
How many do you have?
This next one in March will be 18.
Wow.
They're not all big like the big ones.
Uh-huh.
Although I think this is the ninth big one. So that is a lot.
That is a lot. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you used to be the editor of Better Homes and Gardens?
No. I was the garden editor at House Beautiful magazine.
Okay, that's what I was saying.
And I was the editor of Garden Design magazine many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I loved magazines, but they too have kind of gone.
The industry, I mean, the business.
The business.
Yeah.
And it's all, that's also not a pleasant world.
With my limited experience, I agree. Not that I was an editor, but as a writer, and just not that they messed with my writing at all. It was just the other stuff.
I'm doing an article for AARP right now, which is something I've always wanted to do because they pay a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a string of people, something like 20 people, all get to react to the piece. So every time it goes to the next person, it's 30% rewrite at least.
Do they do it or do you
do it? I do it. They send it back to me.
Well, at least they do that.
My goal, as it's developed, is to try to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm,
and which is very hard because they really want it to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
They want it to be quick, easy, over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, have a miracle garden in 20 minutes. It doesn't take any time. You don't have to spend any time. And television has really made that even worse. So it's all about getting it done in no time. It's not what we're into it for. And it's not the pleasure of it. Having a pretty garden and then hiring someone to take care of it, what's the point? And that's why so many people just have paving. Even if you have a swimming pool, then you know how much work it is to have a swimming pool, to add chemicals, to have somebody do it for you, to get the pH right, to have the chlorine so it doesn't burn your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
It's inexpensive.
Right.
I don't even think gardening is as hard as having a pool.
Yeah, you talk about that quick fix sort of thing in your book. I've met people like that. Do you consider people like that to be gardeners? You know, that just want the, like, oh, it's cheaper just to, if this plant has given me too much trouble, just toss it out and buy a new one, you know, rather than take care of it.
Well, there's that, and I think the way you describe that, it sounds like something admirable. I think it would be good to be able to throw them out.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who don't even know what a plant is, who just want a nice backyard to either look at or to impress their friends,
right.
Or because they're told they need one, They have lawn because they think their kids are going to play on it, but the kids are in front of the video screen anyway. Mm-hmm. Those aren't gardens. No.
Right, right.
And they don't appeal to me, but a garden to appeal to me doesn't have to be big or fancy or anything. Right. You can, and I know you know, you can tell at once when you see a garden whether it's interesting. And usually that interestingness, and it can really be a container that's planted nicely,
mm-hmm.
it's the evidence of the person behind it. It's mm-hmm. There was somebody here who cared, mm-hmm. who was interested, even if it's funky or a tire planter or something. Oh, look, somebody did this.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's no evidence of that, like somebody had it done, or they came in and did this week, and you can tell that instantly too, it's not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have soul.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the soul of the garden that attracts me.
You said that in your book, and I actually wrote that down here to ask you about that. What kind of evidence shows you the soul of the gardener? Take a container planting or something.
I was thinking of that because I'm trying to think of something really small. I can describe it, but I'm trying to think of an example of personality, I guess. And even if it has living plants, if that personality isn't there, it's kind of dead. But I saw a tire planter, which I use as an example,
mm-hmm.
and it was just painted. The tire was painted, and the plants were wonderfully colorful and mm-hmm. tidy.
Mm-hmm.
They were deadheaded.
Mm-hmm.
And even though there were just three plants, they were put together kind of cool. Even mm-hmm. though it was garish, and some people might think it was too much color or something. You could tell somebody thought about it for even 5 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour. Or even when they were shopping, they had the sense to, oh, that'll go good with that. Or maybe they have enough experience to know that if they put something in the shade, it's going to die. Or if they put something in the sun, it's going to fry. Mm-hmm. And that's a little bit of experience, but that's something that somebody who never leaves the air-conditioned house won't know.
Yes, you're right.
It's more about art mm-hmm. and flair and mm-hmm. personality. It's funny, it's hard to describe, but you can see the touch, you can sense it instantly, the difference between hardscape and a couple of plants that are interesting or nicely put together,
mm-hmm.
and not just 3 feet of shelf space from Home Depot, scooped up and plopped down.
Yes.
Those commercials on TV. People are out there having such a good time planting polka dots, one of each plant from the Home Depot shelf, as if we would ever put one marigold with one geranium with one something else, and then they're just so happy. But I've never seen that, except in the minds of some marketing person who doesn't leave his office. And I won't even say her office, because I don't mm-hmm. think a woman could do that.
I actually have a friend who does that.
Does she love her plants, though?
She loves her plants.
Well, let her do it. Well, this garden is polka dot, I have to say, but you can't really tell.
No, it blends together. I mean, it all works together.
Yeah, they're not just one marigold head, but it's pretty much one of everything that mm-hmm. I can jam in there. I was looking at pictures of this garden from quite a while ago, and it was a garden that had a path that had more color and fewer plants and more of each one, and it looked a lot better. But that's the way it is. Time for renovation. I didn't realize that in this career of gardening, I thought that the older the garden was, the better it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
They have their times.
Mm-hmm.
And then you really have to get them back. You have to wrangle them and corral them and herd them. And I can't, but I can't stop acquiring that. My acquisitiveness is just, I can't not have it. I don't know why I need to possess them. Actually, I did a garden for some people near here, just a couple of things, and I realized that if you do it for someone else, then you can still shop.
Yes.
And find new plants.
That's one
cool
thing
too.
I love about it. Yeah.
And I never knew that.
Yeah.
I don't have to really possess them as long as I get to see them and have the experience of, oh, look how well they're doing. Because this garden that I did near here, they have deer, terrible deer.
Oh.
So we wanted some color, and so I really did a little test, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a lot of fun to have a deer resistant garden. And there are those plants, and just going around
yeah.
and looking at, I was in Rhode Island on Block Island giving a lecture, and they have they're on an island trapped with deer, and they just have terrible
wow.
deer. So
mm-hmm.
I saw what was there, and it tipped me off.
What was surviving the deer, you mean?
What really
yeah.
survived the deer, and that's
yeah.
pretty much what I put in that garden. And it worked.
Do you think traits of a gardener, personality traits, character traits, do you think, because you talk a lot about that in this book, or if you don't mean to, it comes out because you have all these people that you're profiling and their gardens. But do you think that gardeners, as a rule, are independent type people? I mean, do you ever see yourself sitting in an office somewhere? I mean, you couldn't do it.
No.
You're just not capable.
It's interesting, as you were saying that, I didn't want to say something that I'm about to say. Because sometimes when I go around, I ask people in the audience, if I'm giving a lecture, I ask them when they were born. And so many of them were born at the same time. Gardeners. It's really weird.
You mean year-wise?
No,
or time of year? Tell me when.
It's April. It's not all of them, but it's an enormous number of them.
Wow.
And they're either Aries or Taurus, and I don't really believe in that
home
stuff.
Home people.
Also, they're stubborn.
Uh-huh.
So when you were saying independent, I don't know if it's stubborn or independent. Maybe I don't play well with others.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of collaborating, and actually I do like to collaborate when the people are open-minded, and I've done it, and it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're not, it's just bossing
you
around, and that's not, I have no interest in that.
Right.
Of course, things suffer. You don't get weekends off, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes you don't have money, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's just the way I am. Mm-hmm. Too bad. I wish I had been taught some things.
With Tom Rooks, is that the guy's name in your book? You have a long quote from him, like a couple of columns worth. I loved what he said. He said some of the stuff that you've said, too, about playing in the dirt and all that, but he said he was so glad he could wear dirty clothes to work and stuff like that. And I said, yeah, I just loved reading that. And because I used to think there was something, I was missing something because of the fact that I can't work in an office environment. I'm incapable. I hate it. I'd rather die, but, well, not really. Maybe, though. Reading some of that stuff in your book, it just made me feel like, wow, maybe gardeners are just really independent types of people like you are. There are a lot of gardeners who do work for organizations and like botanical gardens. And
yeah, but the people who are successful are usually in administration.
Yeah.
And they could be selling anything. They could be selling, well, it's an institution, the botanical garden. So it could be a museum or it could be a library. Those are kind of, they're the same people. And maybe they like gardens. There's a lot of people who had careers, especially men, I think. Older people who had careers and then turned to gardening. Which is most people turn to gardening when the kids go off to college, you know, or get more serious about
mm-hmm.
it. And in the past, it's been older people, but now it's all changing because there's so much competition for time and eyes. And the people who used to turn to gardening are now turning to so many other things because there's just so much competition.
Really? What else would they turn to, for instance?
Facebook or or Twitter or writing stuff or doing genealogy, or there's just so much to attract people. I mean, people who need to be in the garden are in the garden, but more people are used to turn to it. Now there's just too much competition. And gardening is tough because as you know, there's no money in it. Very little money in it. And no money supporting it, which is the biggest thing. And more, fewer people get it. People can come here and not know what this is, you know, just not realize that there's a person behind this.
That you grew these things.
Yeah. Sometimes they don't see a difference between this and the roadside being full of plants. It's just this green fuzzy thing that's over there. It happens. It doesn't happen to everybody. It doesn't happen that often, but it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody came once and asked why I didn't have more lawn, man.
Do you think that there are as many men gardeners as women?
No. But among the more specializing people, the people who are collectors and who get really into it and dig in are usually men. I was going to say retired doctors and things
mm-hmm.
like that. Some of the great gardeners and great acquirers of plants have had big careers, and often doctors, all sorts of careers. So they grew up in a time when you had to have a career.
What you wrote about your father. I loved
this
that.
This book is so long ago, and even if it was yesterday, I probably still wouldn't remember it. Or even if it was a recent book, because when I send off this book in about 2 weeks, I won't see it again for months. So when it comes out, I haven't seen it for months. And the book you're talking about, I haven't seen in years.
Well, I really, really like it a whole lot.
And I remember what I was doing with that book, because I wanted to really lay it down mm-hmm. and make a manifesto mm-hmm. and in a way promote a, I shouldn't say religion because that's not really the right word, but it's like that.
It's an ethic, philosophy.
I was pretty, I guess, political. I'm going to say angry, but it doesn't seem strange to you because you already know that stuff. But I was telling people that there's another way.
Yeah,
and,
I
and
like
showing
that.
Them people who see another way. But then they still cut down trees and they still put parking lots and don't make permeable parking lots and build more around here. Build more Walmarts with parking lots and asphalt. So it's pretty low on the list.
Yes,
of all
is.
The horrible things that are happening, there's more horrible things.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of interest in making things better.
Are you still doing sculpture and all that?
No, I've been too busy. And for a really long time, I'm itchy to do it. Last year I was doing a book, and I was creating the art for it all summer. And that was that. And this summer it's been hot, and it's great that I'm busy and I have some work. It's been a while, so I have to do it because I got it. And for another couple of weeks, it's going to be work.
I love your photos. Really, really nice. Really nice.
Well, the next book is not photographed by me.
Why?
I wanted to do something different, and I know this woman who makes art with plants, and I wanted to do a project with her, and I am.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that she didn't know anything about plants. Mostly I grew plants, cut plants, and she scanned them on a giant flatbed scanner.
I looked at her website. She was utterly delighted.
So the next project is with her. Because in this climate of print being in so much trouble, I really wanted to do something that would stand out and look different and that you would want to possess in the form of a book or on your wall. Something that you wanted to hold and see and maybe touch, because we have to do something different when most people are reading on a Kindle and if you're in for your bookstore.
That's
and
great.
It's almost done. I survived.
Is there anything else you want to say that you want people to know about gardeners in general, your take on gardeners, or the book, or your books, or your radio program?
Well, all that stuff. But when you ask me the question first, I would say, just do it. Do it. Do it small. Do it any way you can. Just go and do it. Especially small. Start small. Do something. And maybe you'll get it. And you'll get the bug. And I won't have to even worry about you.
Right,
because you'll just take off. once you feel it, there's no stopping. Because we've talked about all these big ideas, and I don't want people to be scared, because if they do it, they didn't get it.
Do you think it's a special kind of addiction?
No, it's like all addictions. When you do it, it feels good, so you want more.
Okay.
And I'm sure that's chemical in our brains. But that's what it is. You know, you need more. And maybe when you're really a super addict, then you need more to get the same thrill you had before with less. But I don't know if that's true.
Uh-huh.
It's up to the gardener. It doesn't have to be big. But when you plant something and you see it thrive and grow and get bigger and look good, it just, and you're part of it, and you helped it look good and healthy, it's like nurturing anything. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Thrilling.